At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist, you'll want to invite everyone over. From book club to reality TV watch parties, even the in-laws.
It smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is infused with 2 times more essential oil versus regular Airwick Essential Mist for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is perfectly portable and effortlessly easy. The way fragrance should be. Now that's a breath of fresh Airwick.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Crack Podcast. Welcome to the Crack Podcast. You are with your host, Mauricio Mookie Wilson. I'm so honored to be joined with my two brothers, my co-hosts, two U.S. national team legends. Give a big round of applause, please, to DeMarcus Beasley and Aguchi Anyewu.
What up? What's up? What's going on?
We have a terrific episode lined up. We have one of the GOATs, Timothy Howard, is going to join us a little bit later. How you fellas doing, man? What's going on?
Bro, I'm just trying to survive, you know, trying to stay younger looking than bees right now, but you know how it is.
Hey. So, I mean, you couldn't even put happy birthday in the intro?
I was going,
I'm talking to the host. Like, today actually is my birthday.
Bees, you gotta chill, man. We're gonna build up to that, man. How are you gonna start off the episode with just happy birthday?
Hey, man, it's the man's day. It's the man's day. He can do what he wants.
You need to acknowledge that it's my birthday.
We was gonna acknowledge both of y'all birthday for the month, you punk ass. You know how he do it.
But it's his day.
God damn.
I'm just saying. But I appreciate it. Thank y'all. Today is my birthday. I am happy, healthy. My family's healthy, so God is good. My 38th.
38.
Good to be here. Yeah, 38. 38. So
I thought you started losing your hair at 38.
I lost my hair like at 28.
Now, real talk, Bees. Gooch, we just celebrated your birthday a couple of weeks ago. How is it, you know, having a birthday in this type of pandemic?
To be fair, when all this started in March, I was like, oh man, my birthday's in May. I'll be fine by then. You know, then April creeped up and all the April birthdays, and I was like, oh damn, this might creep up to my birthday. And sure enough, isolation, homebound, Zoom meetings with my family. That was about it, but it is what it is. Blessed to have another year. Blessed to be with you guys doing this, and you know, you gotta look at the positive side.
Yeah, man, that's it.
But Bees, I heard everything's open in Texas, man. You plan on going to the club tonight or going out to eat?
He said a club. No, look, I got my celebratory wine right here. I'm good.
Yes.
To go, man.
Cheers. This is not vodka. Ice water.
As much as Texas is open, I still don't feel, me personally, I'm not saying, you know, I know people still got, you know, they got to go back to work. They got to earn a living. You know what I'm saying? I have mixed feelings because I'm happy that the country can kind of have some kind of normalcy, you know, obviously getting back, you know, making a living for the families and all that. But for me personally, I don't feel comfortable. So I'm not going to no club, and I wouldn't go anyway, but I'm not going to a restaurant sitting down. Like, I barely even go, you know, pick up food. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I'm cooking every day.
You got to be careful, not just for yourself, you know?
Yeah, you know what I'm saying, for my daughter. So I'm chilling. I'm good. I'm happy, healthy. So I ain't doing none of that for sure.
Hey guys, we came a long way from celebrating you two birthdays. Many different cities: DC, Washington, LA. New York. You know, now we're just home sipping wine and on a podcast. So we came a long way.
Hey, if B starts slurring his words in the middle of this, you know why.
He gets a pass. He gets a pass.
I get a pass today. But, yo, I was thinking the other day, you know, because, you know, we got to do his birthday now in quarantine and Zoom and all this. And I was thinking, like, what was my best birthday? Or, like, what was my best birthday party or night or something? And I gotta put it to a little bit of, you know, because this is, you know, we all soccer heads. So one of my best, not the best, one of my best birthdays was in London. Mm. And it was the day, I don't know, Gooch, was you there when we played England in Wembley?
Yeah. All right. Enough said. Stop. Point blank. Period.
let me tell the story. Just a quick story. So, all right. So, we're playing. You're going to tell the whole story,
then.
Oh, yeah.
Don't cut it.
This is when Bob was the coach, you know. And, you know, Bob is real stern. You know, he don't take no mess. And, you know, but obviously, Bob and I go back, you know, in the Chicago Fire days. So, and this is when I was still on Bob's good side. So, long story short, I actually, you know, we were planning this birthday party, you know, in the club. We were promoting it, like we're gonna put out flyers, and I was trying to get some of the English boys into the party, and I rented this whole spot just for me, or just that. For my party. You know what I'm saying? And I literally asked Bob. I was like, "Yo, Bob, after the game, it's my birthday, you know, and you know, I wanted to have a party after the game." And he was like, at first he was like, no. He's like, there's not, going to be no, you're not doing it, you know? And I was like, oh, you know, Bob, can, you know, it's you know, this. And we had a conversation. I can't remember what he said exactly, but he
kind of – I have an idea.
Yeah, but he left it as, you know, as long as you're focused for the game, because after the game, you know, we're flying somewhere. I can't remember where we went or where we were going. But we went somewhere after the English game. We were going somewhere for another game or another training session or something. And he's like, he didn't say no, but he didn't say yes.
Yeah.
He didn't say no. But so at the end of the day,
how did you take it?
I took it as a yes.
No, hold up, B. You're a parent now.
You're
a parent now.
But, I mean,
if you tell your daughter no, but not yes, you know what damn well what that means.
Exactly. I know it meant no. But I mean, I took it as a yes. You know, because I had all this shit already planned,
lined up,
everything. So
who was the promoter, by the way?
I couldn't remember who the promoter was. But
Mo Samba.
I mean. I think it might have been Mo Samba.
Probably Mo Samba.
But yo, I'm talking about we rented Lamborghinis. Oh yeah, we had the whole thing planned out. We rented Lamborghinis, so to take us from
Young and Dumb.
From the hotel to the spot, to the club. So we're gonna, you know, obviously pull up.
And I'm gonna put a pin in this right here because I know damn well I didn't ride in no Lamborghini. I know damn well I
got this to the bus.
Hey, you went on the list.
I got in the black cab. I got in the black cab.
They went on the list.
I said, I'm here for DeMarcus. And they're like, mm-mm.
Yeah. So that was kind of like my story. So we rented a limo. I mean, rented a Lamborghini. It was two of them. Rented Lamborghinis. Went to the party. We had a great time. We rented out the whole spot, and I got back. And I mean, it was cool. Like Bob, you know, obviously he knew I went, but he didn't say yes. He's kind of gave me okay, B's, you really gonna do that?
Yeah.
In the middle of the national camp, because we went somewhere after, but I can't remember where.
I think Bob knew you're gonna do it regardless. Yeah.
He was testing him.
No, he knew he's gonna do it regardless. So he said, "Listen,
what am I gonna say?" But I think I was a good professional. I asked
for coming to him. I have a real question. What was the score of the game?
What was the score of that game?
I think we lost 1-0.
Yeah, 1-0. I think we lost 1-0. Yeah. And I asked him before. So it wasn't, you know, and I still started, you know what I'm saying? So it wasn't that, you know, I was thinking, you know, just about going out, which, you know, I was. But, you know, he could have said, oh, well, B's has got his mind on different things and this and that, so I'm not going to play him because he's thinking about going to this party. You know, but I still started, still played 90, I think. You know, I think that's right. I don't know. So that's my birthday story for y'all. That's one of my stories.
But, fellas, we're in weird times, COVID-19. You can see all the leagues are kind of not saying forcing, but it's starting to get the wheels rolling and attempting to start the season. We spoke about and we saw the German games this weekend, which is sort of lopsided. You see a lot of 4-0, 3-0, 5-0. Why? What do you think the reason for that?
And you see a lot of home teams are not winning.
Yeah, right. No advantage.
Yeah, two or three home teams have won since they started, so it's zero advantage. So that's what we talked about with Gooch with the last episode, saying that crowd, that 12th man, that's a big
makes a difference. Big,
yeah, it makes a difference for sure, 100%. What do you think, Gooch?
I mean, right now it's hard because their preparation wasn't real preparation, right? Like they couldn't even have full team contact for a long time. So I think right now you're just getting the result of, I guess, who's, I guess, physically better at the at the point in time, right? Because you see Dortmund is just running right now, you know? And some teams just can't do it. I mean, Schalke just can't seem to get it right, but they're a good team historically, right? So I don't know. It's like you said, it's getting boring because it's not real, right? The element of the fans is something that you just can't emulate. You can't replicate that. If it's there, it's there.
I do appreciate the goals. Obviously, there's a lot of mistakes going on. And that's why we see a lot of goals being scored, lapsided.
But you guys know, like in practice, like if you're playing a scrimmage, there's gonna be a lot of goals in like a regular. It almost feels like
ain't nobody trying to defend. Ain't nobody trying to
defend. It's like, oh, he went through.
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
So what are you guys thinking right now with you know, the Premier League was attempted to come back in June, but then they finding some players are testing positive for the corona. I think out of 800, around 800 players, I think maybe five or six has tested positive. Is that ratio low enough to continue, or is one too many?
I mean, I understand, and people are gonna say, "Oh, you know, he's not a player anymore. He's not playing." I don't think so. You know, I think that they should, you know, they should wait. You know, just like I said before. You know, even though I understand. You know, people have to work, you know, like even in Houston, you know, everything has to be open, the restaurants, you know, people have, you know, they got families, they got to make
families.
I understand that part, but I'm just saying for me personally. So if you're asking me my personal opinion, I don't think they should, you know, I don't think they should start until all that is, you know, cleaned up and obviously they're not going to have a vaccine anytime soon. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think, you know, those, you know, having, you know, 6, 7, 8 people that are infected is going to be, it's going to get worse. It's going to get worse as it gets better. You know, so now that things are starting to happen, people are starting to get back to some, what's that word again, Gooch?
Normalcy.
Normalcy. You know, I think it's just going to get worse, but that's just my personal opinion, you know, but I understand why. I get it. You know,
obviously it's not motivated by the safety and health of the players, right? So there's other motivations behind wanting to rush it. You see in other countries, Holland, they canceled their season. France, they were just like, nah.
And I appreciate that, though, Gooch. I appreciate that the leadership to say, you know what, we're going to make a definite decision. Let's just move on. You know, if you're going to do it, do it. If you're not going to do it, don't do it. I think that was intelligent by them. You know, the MLS as well has got the ball rolling, and there's talks about having all the teams going down to Florida to train and have like a mini tournament. Also, you know, the Premier League, you know, at least they get a chance to stay in their home beds and train and be with their family. But I don't know which is better and which is worse, right? To be around your family, to go in and out, or to be secluded with your squad, with your team for a month.
Yeah, I mean, they're both trying to, obviously, it's different situations. Obviously, one's England and MLS, but, you know, obviously everyone's getting their cue from Germany.
Yeah,
you know? And from what I know, or what I've read so far, is that there hasn't been any, you know, positive testing so far in these 2 weeks that Germany's been back playing. But you know, for me, I don't to be in England and if I had to choose one, I'd rather be with my family, rather being in my own home.
There you go,
and you know, have it that way. You know, to be able to take your, you know, all these players and put them in all under one roof, but then say, yo, you can't go outside. What's the point?
Well, guys, I want to read you part of our segment. We have Danny Rose, who's a left back for Tottenham Hotspurs. Danny said, and I quote, just off the fact that people are suggesting we should go back to football, like we're guinea pigs or lab rats. We're going to experiment this phase and see if it works or not. And then also for the MLS, we have Alejandro Bedoya, you know, he had a statement.
We're taking all the risk again, you know, by going down there, being isolated. You know, I think it's a strong term to say it's like being in a luxurious prison. Mm. But essentially, we're going to be sequestered in a hotel in Disney, not being able to do much. This isn't normal preseason where we can have the freedom to go to out to dinner with the guys, where we can go to a movie theater, watch a movie, where we can even go for a quick run to CVS to get the essentials, you know.
I mean, interesting. Two separate leagues, two separate players having
the
issue.
Same thing.
Yeah.
They're saying the same thing.
It's it's, you know, it's the heads versus the players. And right now the heads, you know, they're thinking of the survival of their product, which is their leagues, which is MLS or the EPL. And then the players, for them, they're thinking of the morality of it. They're human beings before anything, regardless of the fact that they know they're much more fortunate financially in a position than the rest of the world. But at the end of the day, they have lives, they have families, they have children. And ultimately, they're putting their extended families at risk by, like Danny Rose said, potentially being a guinea pig. So I see both sides of it. You know, I empathize with Alejandro. That's my boy. We've spoken about this before. And, you know, I wouldn't say that his perspective is wrong, right? It's just going to be, you know, both sides have to, I guess, come to some kind of agreement.
But you have the side that says, listen, this is your job. And unfortunately, you have to do certain things you might not want to do for the money. And, you know, a lot of people, hospital workers, not saying to compare them to footballers, but you have people who are risking their lives to keep the economy going. And everybody feels that sports is a major part of people's psyche and the morale of the people of the country, especially in the Premier League.
So you think the heads of these leagues are thinking that? Zero chance.
I was thinking more the fans or the people who say, listen, or who don't have any type of comfort for these millionaire players feeling sad that they have to go back to play. You know,
well, you saw Chelsea was allowing Conte to skip the rest of the season because he was worried about the potential risk to his family, and they understood that. They're like, listen, if you have predisposed health issues and you don't feel right, skip it.
How does that affect his career, though?
I don't think it does.
The man won the World Cup. What's that affected?
I don't think it would.
So what if Chelsea performs well and they feel like, you know what, Conte's value is not as high? You don't think they're going to sell Conte next year?
No.
He's out of here.
No.
You think so?
Hell yeah.
No.
Zero chance.
Out of here.
Watch.
Zero chance.
You think Lampard's going to do that and he knows what Conte has done for him up until this point?
It's an ugly business. It's not about what you've done before; it's what you can do now.
There aren't many players like him. You know, Conte's like the old school defensive midfielder.
Mm-hmm. Makélélé, kind of.
Makélélé, you know, and I even go my homie, you know, Chris Armas.
Yes.
He's bringing back the names now.
Oh yeah. You know, there's not many defensive midfielders like that. You know,
Eastern New York, baby.
Now you got a defensive midfielder like Busquets. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Busquets is a million. Yeah.
But you get my point. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, they want to play the pretty football. They want to attack too. They want to keep the ball, this and that. But obviously, getting in, tackling, breaking up plays, really, you know, supporting, you know, Gooch, the two center backs, you know what I'm saying? That is important. And, you know, Conte is like the old school defensive midfielder that a lot of teams don't have anymore. So I don't think, you know, even though soccer is a business, I don't think they're going to let Conte go.
You guys know that Conte is playing further up the field these days, and they have Janinho.
True.
Who's playing
true,
six, but he can, who, but just like covered, you said, is the new school type of defensive mid.
That's true, but he still Conte,
at the end of the day, if he leaves Chelsea, he's just going to go to another top club.
Arsenal.
I said top club, buddy.
Hey, I would not stand around for this disrespect. You hear me?
So do you think Arsenal is a top club?
Of course. What do you mean?
Right
what
now?
Mean, do I think?
Right now?
Listen, Manchester United, Chelsea, they all went through issues when they changed coaches. Yeah, We're just going through a transition. Have some respect on the Gunners, all right? But fellas, speaking on top clubs, all right, did you guys get a chance to see FC Cincinnati hired Jaap Stam as the head coach? They finally made a decision. But the press release, I think the press release had DeMarcus Beasley face on there.
They could have put me on that, man.
You saw how, They posted somebody else in the next post to put title. Oops.
Yo, do you think they did that? Do you think they did that on purpose?
I think that the media for FC Cincinnati is the rookies, and they didn't really realize. I think the guy they posted was another coach who was applying for the job. But he's a top coach. So what do you guys think about him coming to the league?
I think this is the first good thing that club has done.
Wow.
And let's be honest. On the field, they haven't been productive, right? If we're talking about the USL before they came to the MLS.
One year.
But look at Atlanta. Like you say 1 year, look at Atlanta. Yeah.
LAFC. LAFC.
Look at Chicago Fire 98. They won the championship.
Yeah, back when Bees was 38. Back in 98.
Bees, you got to take a shot every time you bring back Chicago Fire. Because you spoke about Bob Bradley. You spoke about Armas.
That's three.
No, but I'm saying, like, they haven't been making headlines on the field. Definitely.
No, and they got a lot of things wrong.
They hire a coach that, you know, he's coached at Reading, he's coached at Feyenoord, he's played at top clubs, he played at PSV where Bees was, AC Milan. And then they go and F it up by putting another person's picture in the post, in the press release.
Can you imagine LA Lakers did that, though? If LA Lakers put Aguchi Oyewu as the pitcher for the head coach.
But let me ask you a question. Would you have clicked on the story, if it wasn't, you know, Yap Stam on his own picture? Would you have? No. I would have scrolled because I saw it on Twitter.
Yeah.
I would have said, okay, FC Cincinnati got a new coach. Okay. I would have scrolled. I would have kept going.
Yeah, but since they missed it.
I think they did it, you know. I think it.
Oh, maybe. Controversy. Oh, yeah, you
so people
smart.
Actually went, yeah.
Nah.
Hey, we're sitting here talking about it.
It's like on the field where a striker tries to shoot it and hits the ground and then looks at the grass like it's
sniper.
I'm not saying they did it on purpose. I'm saying that it got people to actually look into FC Cincinnati,
right.
The team, you know what I'm saying? So whoever messed up, you know, kind of made it a good.
So, B, tell us about this PSV guy, man. Is he going to be good for the league? You think he's a good addition and he can relate to the MLS American players?
I mean, I don't know nothing about him. I mean, I know that, you know, I got him a red card.
What do you mean? What do you mean you got him a red card? You bought it for him?
He was talking trash.
Yeah. Nah. And with PSV, we had played AC Milan. After the first year, we went to the semifinals. Yes, I did say that. After the first year, we got him in our group, mm-hmm. in with PSV in Champions League. So, at a home game, I can't remember who got him a yellow card in the beginning. It might have been me. I can't remember. But I got a ball. Second half. You know, I was having a good game. We actually won that game 1-0. Farfan scored, and so I got a ball, and it was one of those where. It was a quick turnover. So we got the ball stolen, but I was kind of like not really defending, which I didn't do much back then. And a ball got played out to me, and I was 1v1 with Yap Stam. 1v1. And I did, you know me, I didn't have no step over moves. I didn't do none of that crazy stuff. I didn't really have any moves. I used my speed and just kind of my
slow, my fast.
The shoulder dip. So I got him with the shoulder dip to the right inside, and I went out to the left, and to his credit, he did kind of slip. He did slip, but then he pulled my jersey. He pulled my jersey and pulled me down. And I'm not gonna lie, I could have kept going, but I knew he had a yellow card.
Ladies and gentlemen, the man admitted it. The man admitted it. He flopped. He flopped.
100% is a yellow card because he pulled my jersey and I was going down, but I could have stayed up. But I knew he had a yellow card, so I fell.
Floppy bees.
And there you go. And there you go. So I got back then. That's my claim to fame.
Hey, I read.
I'm a red card.
I read something that they planned on giving. A yellow card for people spitting on the field, or something like that. Is that true?
Man,
that's the dumbest thing somebody could have done.
I think there was some FIFA officials that said, you know, if we're gonna play in England. It's a dirty habit. It's a dirty thing, and they should be penalized because, you know, that's going to be spreading the virus. I'm like, how can you even play a sport,
and
soccer, and not spit? Yeah. Like, I don't. Dude,
You probably get red carded in the damn tunnel.
No, I get red carded. You know when the referee comes to the locker room to check your cleats? Like you ain't going out. You ain't going out.
Do they still do that? They don't go in and check cleats no more.
You tell me, baby. Yeah, I'm sure.
No, they. Yeah. I'm trying to think. Do they still?
They come in. They come in the locker room before the game just to be like, just to check
international games. International
shin guards.
Games. MLS games.
No, they don't.
Sometimes. They have to check shin guards and cleats, though, Beast.
Not when the players are there.
Because less metal cleats is okay.
What world y'all live in? No, they don't. I just retired, 7 months ago. They did not come into the locker room before the game to check.
Because they know you old. They have to check your boots and shin guards.
What are y'all talking about?
I remember them coming in.
International games, not MLS games. International games, they do, you know, because a guy, the ref comes in and tries to speak English and he messes up everybody's name. You know, they'd be like,
Demarius. Come on, Demarius.
I'm not saying me, I'm saying the ref.
He act like his name is Michael or something like that.
The ref from Nicaragua, he was trying to pronounce Oguchi.
Yo, Gooch, what's that, smoothie? What you drinking on? Oh,
baby, I'm just sipping on that wine that B's got.
That look like beet juice, Gooch. Is that for your skin?
We got to celebrate. Happy 38.
Birthday month, baby.
Yeah, man. Bees, man. Yo, so we have a tremendous show today. I'm excited to speak to Tim Howard. You know, you guys got a chance to play with Tim. But, Tim has been in – he's the same age as me, so he's a 79. And he's been on the platform from a very young age. And it was like he was groomed to be – this special and this the GOAT is what I like to call him, as one of the best goalkeepers we ever had. You know, where do you rate him, Gooch?
In the goalkeepers?
Yeah.
Man, that's a hard one because we've had some freaking legendary goalkeepers.
Yeah, we have.
Brad Friedel has like a record in premiership starts and stuff like that. You got Casey Kelly who was doing the thing overseas before overseas was a thing. And then, you know, I think Tim, he followed really well in their footsteps, and then after that just blazed his own path, you know what I mean, and made his own name, kind of made everybody forget about the other goalkeepers before him. So, real talk, true story, you know?
Why do you think we produce such amazing goalkeepers in the United States?
I'm trying to think of that same thing. Like, how can we do that, but we can't produce
is that we're very, you know, a lot of our sports are hand coordination from a child, basketball, baseball, you know, Gooch played volleyball growing up. I mean, it's all hand coordination.
Water polo.
You know, so at football, obviously, right? Forget about American football, you know, so I think that maybe gives us the advantage from early on in terms of having that hand coordination. Otherwise, I can't call them, but we just tremendously, we keep on putting out top keepers, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and you look at it, we've, you know, it's like the word world class, you know, it's kind of like the word legend mm-hmm. that gets thrown around a lot, you know what I'm saying? People just use it and, you know, whatever. But like we've produced world-class legendary goalkeepers. Like if you go to England, you go anywhere around the world, and you say Brad Friedel, they know who he is.
Yeah.
You say Tim Howard, they know who he is. You know what I'm saying? They say you see Casey Keller when he's at top, they know who he is. You know what I'm saying? But
why come nobody talk about Tony Mignola? Pretty boy.
I like Tony. Yeah, Tony, he was good.
Did Tony have the international impact that the other three did though?
No.
He never had a chance to go over there. And
right. But he was still a good goalkeeper.
Tony, but he was just a looker though. Like, you know, Tony
with the ponytail.
Oh man, he was like the New Jersey looking stud.
But they had that ill jersey, like the yellow, black.
Yeah, the ill black.
The Adidas jersey.
And Tony was the first footballer to try to play American football. Remember, he tried out for the Jets as a kicker.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, it never worked out.
He didn't do it.
I know he was there for a preseason, but he never got the job.
I thought he at least was on the practice squad. I thought he made the team, and then he was just on the practice squad, like the, you know, kicking. He didn't. No.
We'll bring him on the show and ask him.
Yeah, we can definitely get Tony on the show. He's still very active and commentating, and he has an academy as well, you know. But when was the first time, Bees, that you got a chance to play with Timmy?
With Timmy? I mean, I played against him and scored against him, you know, quite a few times.
UCB's always got to throw in a little starts like that.
Hey, it's his birthday. Let him slide.
Yeah, it's my birthday. Let me hype myself up, please. It's my birthday. Let me be. Thank you. Nah, I scored a couple game winners against Timmy, so that's good. Nah, but first time playing with him, I think it was national team, obviously. I can't remember the year or what camp he came in, because I want to say Timmy was started coming into camps, and obviously he'll tell you better than I can, but I think, mm-hmm. I want to say 2000, maybe 6, 4, mm-hmm. 5, something like that. He started coming into camps, you know, with Frito and Casey. But I can't remember, like, the first time I actually, you know, Timmy came into camp. I can't remember.
Yeah. Gooch, do you remember any – is there any national team goalkeepers that came – that we might have forgot about? There's a lot of good goalkeepers. Anyone that's not like the Rushmore.
What about Hanneman?
Marcus.
Hanneman.
Marcus. Yeah, Marcus. Yeah, he played at Reading for a long time.
Long time. Yep. Big shout. Yeah. Big shout. Yeah,
Marcus,
definitely.
Marcus was one of those. He was almost like the Brad Guzan of that time, because he was always behind.
Yes.
HKC, like Brad was always behind Timmy. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Couldn't find no light.
Yeah. Hey, catch a joke. I got a story about Marcus. So, you know, Marcus, he's a character. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying?
Say the
and
least.
I remember, yeah, say the least. So, good dude. Great teammate, great person. But, you know, he loved fish. He loved knives. He loved, you know, all these kind of things. So, we were roommates one time.
Oh, Lord.
And I'll never forget. I walk in the room. And he's just sitting on his bed, basically, like, you know, half naked, you know, sitting on his bed, half naked on his room, sharpening a knife. And the knife was probably about, was like, you know, I don't know, 9 feet.
Wow.
Not 9 feet, but like 10 inches long. It's a long, you know, it's a long knife. And just, you know, sitting on the bed like it was normal, you know, just normal. But like basically naked, sitting on the bed, just sharpening a knife.
Did you help
I'm
him?
Like, man. Heck no.
Did you sit next to him? That's a quick question. Did you sit on a bed next to him after he was sharpening?
I walked right back out the room.
Bees goes, yo, pass me the remote.
That was the craziest thing I remember about Marcus. That man has some stories.
Yeah, man. He's doing a great job of coaching. He has an academy going on now in the Northern Virginia area. So he's still giving back to the game, which is beautiful, you know. Timmy's supposed to come in. He's running a little late. Gooch, you want to hit him up?
Nah, Timmy, he's going to be here, man. Don't worry about it. He's an international superstar. You know what I mean? Like,
man, he on CP time. That's all it is.
He on CP time.
You lucky bees is on right now.
No, and it's my birthday.
And it's my birthday.
Man,
you can't.
I got a glass of wine. So yeah, y'all.
Oh man, ladies and gentlemen, I'm excited and so thrilled to get a chance to introduce the GOAT, Mr. Timmy Howard.
Timmy,
salute.
What's up, man?
What's happening, boys? Good to see you.
What up? Good to see you, man. I like the little artwork you got in the background, man. Yeah, I like man, that.
Got a Memphis.
What's up?
Gotta hold it down.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's what's up. How's
things? Thank you so much for joining us, man. The Crack Podcast. How you feeling?
I'm great, man. I'm great. Thanks.
You know, I'm excited to have you on because I'm a 79 baby out of Long Island.
Good.
And I was telling these guys about the myth I used to hear about you growing up, you know.
Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, I remember the Cosmo squad you had and how you guys used to beat up on people, you know.
Wow. You do remember. Yes. Cosmo is crazy.
Was that back when Timmy was a striker?
Man, partial.
We came down to your neck of the woods. What team did you play for, Gooch?
I played for.
He said Gooch. He said Gooch. He didn't say Mookie. He said Gooch.
I played for the Potomac squad.
We used to go down there. We used to go down to Maryland and beat some boys up. But you were too young. I think you were too young.
But Timmy, that squad was a stacked squad, the Cosmos, man. Yeah, and he had a lot of brothers on that team too.
out of Trenton.
Out of Trenton, man. Yeah.
Back then, y'all had brothers on the team?
Yeah. I mean, listen, I'm trying to tell you, Trenton was.
It was no joke.
It was rough.
Yeah. Timmy, one of the myths I heard was you used to kick field goals over the opposing team's crossbar.
I used to be able to kick it long. Not too much in the rest of my career, but
And the second myth was I used to punt the ball and then sprint forward and before the ball lands, you would be a forward and score goals.
Well,
you know?
I would play forward, but I would.
Yeah. But great times, man. But Timmy, you're in Memphis now.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Power move, brother. Power move. You know, the first question I have is, how are you able to put this tremendous opportunity for yourself together? I mean, as a partial owner, sporting director, and a player.
How did you parlay that? I need to know. I need your agent. We need your lawyer.
I don't recommend the playing part, I can tell you. I'll tell you what happened. You know, like all of us here, I had a vision of what post playing looked like. Again, I couldn't tell you matter of factly or concretely because I didn't know I was a player. That's all I ever really was. And,
yeah.
But I saw a bunch of sides of the game. I saw coaching. I saw the agent side. I saw scouting. I saw front office, supporting directors, and all of the things that I looked at and talked to friends about. I felt like that was the area I wanted to be in on the sporting director side. So once the team that was step two, we didn't have a team in 2018. We launched a bid or the ownership group launched a bid. I also wanted to get into ownership. Getting into ownership was very much when like me, Bees and Gooch were young and we were saying, I want to play in Europe. We had no idea what that meant. We just knew we wanted to play in Europe.
Yeah.
It was only until after the fact, like, oh, okay, I'm pretty good. And teams were scouting me. That's how it ended. So I was like, I want to be an owner. It was kind of a pipe dream because, like, how am I going to become an owner of anything, you know? But it was just something I put in my head. And once they got the franchise, we reached out and spoke. And we talked a very similar language in terms of the vision for what a team would look like in Memphis. And they brought me on as a minority owner. And then I did a bunch of things in the background because, as we all do, we have vast soccer knowledge that a lot of other people don't possess. So I helped with some contracts. I helped bring some, you know, talk to some players and talk to some agents. And
nice.
It was all from afar. It was not in the office in an official role. And then when I finished playing, the ownership group asked me if I thought I wanted to move into the sporting director role since I was doing some of that stuff anyway. And I jumped at it. So
tell me, how do you go from, you know, just like you said, a pipe dream of being an owner to now you fall into – the sporting director, so you're an owner, minority owner, sporting director, and now you're the damn starting goalkeeper for the team. Is that not a conflict of interest if you've ever heard the term?
A little bit. I think Gucci bring up a great point. I think it's one that I recognized early on, that if I was going to play, I was also the guy who was doing players' contracts and you know, there was definitely a conflict. I think overall, and I got to be honest with you, it wasn't. My career for me has been very satisfying. This wasn't trying to have any sort of last hurrah. I think more than anything is, you know, I, along with some other good people, are building this team in Memphis, and we're young. We're 2 years in. Quite honestly, guys, year one looks nothing like year two, so I can't even say that this is like 2.0. It's almost like year one all over again because we brought some players in year one. We stripped the team down to 9 players, and we almost rebuilt again. And for me, and I know – having been in some of the greatest teams and locker rooms together, the three of us, culture was massive for me. Culture was massive. And building like the layers and the foundations of what it meant to really be inside. And like, it's not some of the places you play. It's not Milan, not Everton, it's not Man City. These aren't, you know, you're not walking in there and it's already the guys going, this is how we play.
Yeah.
This is how we play at Milan. This is what it means. We don't have that, right? That has to be built. And so more than anything, playing for me, I want to win games. But for me, it was culturally. I'm not going to play more than this year. And so I wanted to be in there and be in the firing line. And I couldn't wear a suit and be like, hey, man, you should play harder. But I can
you
wear
want, You wanted to set the tone with your experience in that,
great point.
In that dressing room.
Yeah. Great point.
100%. And so, you look, unfortunately, the way contracts are now a little bit in USL, you kind of get this year-to-year thing. And I really wanted to – and that's okay. But I really wanted to be able to re-sign some players who are like who feel like Memphis is their home, and then we can build from that. So that was the thought behind playing.
Definitely, Tim. I mean, exciting times, and it definitely makes sense when you put it that way. How do you feel so far of your experience with USL as an organization and how they're running the league?
Tim, you guys are back now, right?
Yeah, we're back training. We're back training. We train Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Yep.
Okay.
Individual training, but we open a stadium pitch and we have 9 quadrants, and you guys know it's just great that you know get to pull on the badge and smell the cut grass, and they, even though you're in your own little grid, they're bantering with each other and you know from afar, it's great. What was the question?
As an organization, and getting familiar with the USL and how they run their league. How do you find it? Obviously, having experience with overseas and the MLS, how do you find the USL league and how it's a little bit different than the MLS?
It's challenging. You know, I think that it's been fabulous for me. All of my interactions have been good. You know, I'm a competitor. So if a guy on my team gets fined, I'm talking to people in the league saying that's stupid. Why, you know, and tell me to be quiet and, you know, pay the fine. And so that's just normal. The league's been great. You know, the great thing about this league is they're trying to grow. They're trying to grow in the right way. They want to do things the right way. We treat our players as top-level professionals and expect them to act accordingly. I feel challenged.
Do you think that, obviously, one, you're Tim Howard, right? Mm-hmm. And let's not, you know, be coy. We know that you have an image and, larger than life in U.S. soccer right now, right? So you're Tim Howard. You're signing these players' contracts. Mm-hmm. Now you're their teammate. Mm-hmm. Do you feel isolated ever? You know, and they're like, we don't want to talk to you because, you know, you're playing that side and this side, or is it more?
A little bit, Gooch. I mean, I think that was something that I was very cognizant of, and I felt like that onus was on me. Like, what you're saying, Gooch, is never going to disappear. I'm still that, like, guys are going to be a little iffy, you know, when they're talking about players union stuff. They wait till I'm out of the room. Like, I get that stuff, that side. But the onus was on me to train hard and to ask a lot of myself and to bleed with them and sweat with them and cry with them if that happened. Like, it was on me to do that. So they, like, that's how you buy and earn respect.
Right.
I've definitely felt the conflict of interest, and it's there at times. You can't shy away from it.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. You're right.
But it's a, you know, again, the league is strong. It's intense. It is the competition is really, really good. It's the same way when we all came back to MLS and we felt the competition. We felt the pressure. No different.
So you basically saying that I should definitely have this team before a win.
I'm saying that I couldn't be more proud and excited that you're a part of this thing, because it's
you started it, man. You connected the dots, man.
Look, I appreciate that, and obviously you and I, you know, we talk on a regular basis, but it's like, you know, when, you know, DDA did it, and then myself and Landon and you and David Villa, and like, I get excited. I was reading an article the other day, you know, about Bees and about David Villa, and I was just like, man, this is crazy. You know,
it's
like,
pretty cool.
I'm part of something really, really cool, and it excites the heck out of me.
Yeah, that's, for me, that's what I like about it. The one thing you touched on was, you know, they're trying to grow the game. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? They look at the game and not just like, you know, they don't pigeonhole the game. They look at it as, you know, if we all produce and develop, you know, it's going to make the game better in this whole country.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Because at the end of the day, the whole point is for us to win a World Cup one day.
Yeah,
That's the whole point of this, you know, all these, you know, different leagues, different players, different, you know, whatever. That's the whole point, you know, for one, because I guarantee you, every soccer person and even non-soccer people, one day we win the World Cup, we all celebrate.
Oh, yeah.
We all going to damn celebrate, you know what I'm saying? So I think you hit the nail on the head with that one. They're trying to develop and grow the game and you know, smaller markets, but really have a taste of what it really means to develop, you know, soccer in this country.
Listen,
that's what I like.
You hit the nail on the head. I think no matter what level we all go to, and Gooch, I know with you and I talked about players and what you're doing with Onyx, and we all have this dream and this desire. And so, like, I tell people all the time, you should see the state of me when I'm in the director's suite watching a Memphis 9 FC game. I'm yelling, I'm screaming. Like, it means so much, and it's not fake, and it's not for the fans. And it's like, there's so much passion there. Like, no matter what we do, no matter what club we play for, we coach, we're the sporting director of or owner of, like, it's all going to mean something. Like, you understand what I'm saying? Like, I'd be heartbroken if my team gets to the Eastern Conference Finals and loses. I wouldn't be like, It's just whatever, you know? So we put our passion, our soul into it, and it's growing. There's some good, as you said, there's some good players in this league. And we tell all of our players, we want to empower them. I use that word a lot. So if a coach comes to me and says, I have a better opportunity, we'll say, this is your family. You're always welcome. Never stand in your way. Players, same thing. Come to Memphis. Make this your home. Be proud of representing us. And if I can do anything at all to excel your career, never stand in your way.
Nice.
I'll rip your contract up, and you can go. Because nice. I want players to be able to speak. It's cyclical. This game is cyclical, you know. And so if a guy goes one, it looks good on us. Oh, you played a 901 FC before you went so-and-so. And then he can say, man, they take care of you down there. And so, you know, I learned that from
there Carlos. You go.
I learned that from Carlos Boca Negra. You know, they got this unbelievable training ground. He said, we invite all the teams in to have lunch because I want the players to see what it's like to play in Atlanta.
Yeah, you know? I remember that, yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
Tim, do you guys form an academy for the youth programs as well?
We haven't yet. Obviously, that's very much on the docket with USL. I think there were about 18 months into a 5-year plan, so that's going to start rolling, and it'll be exciting. I think there's enough teams, you know, below the obviously there's Championship League 1, League 2, and then there's some semi-pro teams, and you got the college kids playing in the summer. So and with youth teams, I think there's a real real opportunity for USL. And I think, look, more than anything, for me, scouting is so important. And we don't have a ton of budget in USL for scouting, right? And I think when you start to be able to produce your own players, save money, sell them on, that's important.
What do you think about the relationship between – because I've seen it, like, firsthand. Like, obviously, there's USL, there's MLS, right? And they should be collaborative and working together, but sometimes it's like big brother, little brother, tug of war. How do you, you know, because you're now in the thick of it. Mm-hmm. How do you see that relationship either being hurtful towards the development of players or very helpful towards the development of players in the future?
Yeah, I think it's more helpful. You know, again, I talk about us playing all over the world. We've played in countries that are like this big, right? They're the size of Ohio. The great thing about our country is it's so big. These smaller markets, or mid-major markets can handle having a professional soccer team when there's an MLS team up the road. And so there's just enough to go around. And I think more than anything, we all have a dollar and a dream. And I think that what USL does is it allows players who, listen, if it was just MLS or bust, they'd be out of a job and they'd be, you know, using their college degree to do something else. And this gives them a real opportunity to earn a living and continue to dream that the ultimate dream of, playing in Europe or playing in MLS if that's what suits them. And you know, we have certain guys who realize I keep banging the goals and I can have a 10-year USL career, and they're very happy with that. And so I think it's more advantageous. There's always going to be disadvantages to not having a completely collaborative relationship, but for the most part, it's good.
Timmy, you played for some. A tremendous clubs throughout your career, right? Who do you find stops you more on the street, Man United fans or Everton fans?
They both stop me in the street. The Man United fans say I'm crap. I love you. People always feel connected to me through Everton. And that's, to be honest, when you can't kick a ball anymore, you know, that's the one thing that that gives me so much joy is that there's a generation of people who will basically say to me, you know, Tim, I follow Everton because of you and Landon. I'm like like a nation full of people, but a lot of people who are Everton Blues follow the historic club that I adore because of me. Like, it's so humbling that's more Everton.
Yeah, well, yeah. You said Man United fans say your shit or whatever, but I've never asked you personally. Well, like, I remember when you signed, because I was in France. I remember when you signed to Man U, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, my man, Timmy.
Made it.
Straight up.
And then, so, actually, I need to know what actually happened when you went to Everton. Like, what happened with, I think it was it Van der Sar that signed?
Yep.
What? Walk me through that. Because you were like the man. You were Sard and you were there. And then all of a sudden, it was just like, he's at Everton. I'm like,
Yeah, so my Man United career is pretty easy to sum up. I had a great first season running on fumes, raw talent. I was 23. I was a baby. Yeah, we were all babies, and I had to, you know, in order to get better as a goalkeeper, I had to have this massive learning curve. But you know, when Sir Alex Ferguson throws you in, you don't say like, yeah, but I kind of need to learn a little bit. You just go.
Yeah.
And made a few mistakes, which is natural. Like, I was always going to need a learning curve. Had a really great first season. Second season was kind of in and out. And then that summer, they bought Edwin Vanasar in, who was brilliant. And then he ended up playing my third season. And after the third season, I had so much belief in my own ability. You know, I would say the three of us are, it's interesting when you talk about top players because there's an arrogance, but arrogance is really just self-belief, you know? And I'm looking at it going, well, Edwin's great. He's world-class and he should be playing, but like, I think I should be playing too. So how does this work out? So I went and knocked on Sir Alex Ferguson's door. In fact, I went up there. I tell you what, I was scared to death. And it was about, I remember telling my wife, I said, I'm going up there and I'm telling him because I'm out of here. And I would get up the hall, and if his door was shut, I was like, yeah, I'll go to the bar. You've all been there.
He was busy.
I think he's on the phone. So eventually, he was great. He was brilliant. And I just said, look, I somehow stuttered or mumbled the words out. And I was like, I'd like to play, and I think I need to go on loan. And I had three teams that really wanted me on loan.
Who were they?
It was Wigan, Portsmouth and Everton. And,
nice.
You know, Everton, it was just something. Well, obviously, clearly, after 10 years, I know what it was about Everton. There was something about Everton that I really loved, and spoke to the manager, and then I went on loan.
Good decision.
imagine if you chose Portsmouth.
Well, or.
So. or Wigan.
Yo,
so, Timmy, I'm just going to kind of go back a little bit. So, for me, one of my favorite ever players was Giggsy. Mm-hmm. And I always hear stories about Roy Keane because, you know, he was a character. He was so strong. He was always a leader. You know what I'm saying? So, you always hear stories about Roy Keane. Roy Keane. And obviously, Sir, you know, Ferguson. But how was Giggsy? How is he I call him Giggsy like it's my boy.
Giggsy boy.
like it's my homie. But that was my favorite player. You know, left side winger. You know, always going through people. That's who I look.
Besides the scandal.
Yeah. Besides, you know, how was he?
He handled the scandal too, you know? Like,
yeah.
Giggsy was like, it was cool. I was there. I wasn't there with Beckham. Beckham left the summer I came in. And I always tell people they had in order to fund the buying of Tim Howard, they had to sell Beckham. It was Ronaldo they had to buy. But I was there with the class with Roy Keane in the class of '92, and it was special. You know, you had Rio Ferdinand, who was the most expensive defender in the world at the time, and like so, you had all these players. Giggsy was people always talk about class with Giggsy. Like he would walk in a room, and it's a classic. Like everyone wanted to be Ryan Giggs. Everyone perked up and looked at Ryan Giggs was in the room, and I remember seeing a picture when they first won a title, I think in 92, after they hadn't won it in forever, or whatever it was. And he had this rascal suit on and this crazy tie. And he was a guy who could really take banter, and even from me, some young American kid. And he would give banter and he was just chill. I said, Giggsy, man, what were you doing with your suit? Like, and I was like, I was trying to give it to him. And he was like, Tim, we just won the Premier League for the first time in a year. I could have worn anything I wanted. Good point. But he was great, man. He was awesome. Just silky smooth, class player. As you said, as a winger, you know, and just a real, real cool guy. Just super chill.
Yeah, that was the only – because I've never really been starstruck when I'm playing, you know what I'm saying, on the field. But the one time that I got a chance to play against Giggsy, I said Giggsy, like, you know what I'm saying?
Hey, Beef talk like he got him on speed dial. Ryan Giggs. He's got him on speed dial right now.
Because, you know, when I was at City, we played, you know, maybe not twice, but when we played at Old Trafford, I didn't start. You know, mm-hmm. I came on. But when we played, you know, at City, you know, I was in the tunnel. You know, I was starting. And I literally look over to my right, and there's Ronaldo right there to my right, you know. Mm-hmm. But three people ahead was Giggs, and I was like, and I'm literally – Timmy, I'm standing, about to go – we're about to walk onto the field, and I'm standing, and I can't stop staring at him.
Look at him. He's just fanboying.
Yeah,
all.
I'm fanboying. But, you know, right before the game, you know, you're supposed to be focused. You're supposed to be, you know, not caring who you're playing against. You know, if it's your idol, if it's, you know, the best player in the world, you're supposed to be focused on the game and do your thing. And I literally was just standing – literally looking at him like this. Like, yo, that's Giggsy right there. That's my dog. And to this day, I kicked myself that I never asked him. I was too nervous after the game. you know, to get his jersey.
Sure.
I never did. I still, to this day, I kick myself. I'm like, yo.
Timmy can do that for you. Timmy can just ask.
It's hard in the derby, too. You forget that, you know, that's part of your story. It's hard to ask somebody for a jersey in the derby.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, that's my only year, my first year, my only year in Premier League with City. And I was like, nah, I can't ask him.
For sure.
Timmy, have you ever been rejected for asking somebody for a jersey after a game?
This is like a running joke. I don't really know. I always got, like, Zanetti was classic. It was Zanetti. It was really, you know, Argentina, these boys played a game in the Mutombo. I was like, that was like the team joke. I would ask the guy because I'm a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Like, a goalkeeper trade jerseys, but like, I wanted like any star field player that, like, this is American, dude.
Get out of here. Chance,
man. So all the time. Oh, I got rejected all the time. I just stopped asking after a while. The good thing was, it taught me a lesson that no matter who asked me for a shirt, as I got older in my career, no matter who asked me for a shirt, I'd give anybody a shirt.
Nice. Yeah. Thanks.
That's what I'm saying.
Lesson learned.
Yeah.
Yo, I'm going to transition real quick, and I got a story because I wasn't there this World Cup, you know, 2014. You guys are playing Belgium. Mm-hmm. And this one game put you on a pedestal that I think only Superman is on right now. They made memes about you for about another 365 days, probably still now. You made about 1,500 saves that game. Mm-hmm. Right, unfortunately, you guys lost. Mm-hmm. Now, do you think that was one of your best games or one of the defense's worst performances?
Wait, I played.
Like how he stated that he wasn't part of the game and made that statement.
Let me take a sip of wine for you.
Like he said, I was not there, to be clear.
Yeah, just to be clear, I wasn't there.
Wow.
No, I think that, you know, Belgium was...
Be real.
I think it was a crazy game because I remember thinking at the time, and then when I had some time to dissect it after, like, my job as a goalkeeper, I understand your question. Like, my job as a goalkeeper is to organize the defense, come hell or high water, and when that breaks, make the save, and then figure out where the problem was and fix it. That's my job. And so I'll come back to that transition to, like, our guy. I've never played on a team that was backs against the wall that worked so hard and beast played that game. Like, these guys couldn't give any more. Like, our midfielders, our six, they couldn't have given any more. Like, Belgium was that good. And so it was almost like, man, we ran into a perfect storm. And so, like, for me, even on that game, like, I think I obviously played well because I was making the saves. But, like, for me, it was like, make one save, yell, figure out what it is, put people in the right position. And then if it breaks down, do it again. Like, it just became a circle like that. I didn't think of it at the time of, like, why is this breaking down? I had to just figure out the problem. Mm-hmm. But I tell you what, man, that Belgian team, you know, that they almost underachieved in a sense because that's their golden generation. Like, I say underachieved. Like,
nah, man, after that World Cup, because I played with a lot of those players in Belgium when they were young, and I said, watch in 4 years. These players are going to be something else. And they're like, Belgium? I'm like, watch in 4 years.
Oh,
you saw what they did.
I remember in the first half, I had what was the dude's name? I can't remember the short dude, the little short guy.
Yeah, Mertens.
Mertens.
So, you know, so Timmy. So I had Mertens the first half, right? You know, he did, you know, some things, whatever. Mm-hmm. But then when we went into extra time, they put on Morales, the dude at Everton. You played
with. Morales.
Oh my goodness gracious. Man, you talk about what Timmy? What Timmy said was I couldn't give anymore. But then they put on him. Dog, like, come on, man! Like, you put on a guy who's gonna run at me every single time he got the ball, and I got lucky twice. But, like,
you know what, B? That's what you were giving cats when you were young.
But yo, I remember that when they put him in to just basically run at me in the extra time. Man, I was so damn tired. I could barely stand.
They started Origi. They brought Lukaku on.
Yeah,
Morales on. I mean, it's a bomb squad. And like you said, he played with these guys when they were all – before everyone got exported out of Belgium. They were all playing in Belgium, and they were young. And they probably together combined probably cost £500 million.
£500 million, so expensive.
And I mean, this team, they were incredible. So, like I said, we ran into a buzzsaw.
Hey, Gooch, you see how he thinks like an owner now?
You see that? Politically correct. Right? I wanted him to tell me, yo, our defense played shit. Beans was on his ass half the time.
You saw that. I ain't going to tell you.
I ain't gonna lie. That World Cup. There's only been two people, and you and Timmy. You play with. I think you obviously you play with one of them, but you. There's only been two people since I've been a defender that's actually made me fall. And one of them was Atsu, the from Ghana. Chris Atsu. Yeah. I don't know if you know him.
He twisted you up.
He twisted me up. Yeah. And the second person, Timmy, you wouldn't even believe this. It was I don't think you were in Colorado then. You might not. I can't remember that. But the second person that's ever made me fall being defender was Freddie Adair.
Marlon Harrison. I was gonna say that.
Marlon Harrison.
Whoa.
Marlon. Yes.
He chopped me up.
He did like three or
big
four steps.
To Marlon.
It was like the 89th minute, and he did like these step over, blah blah blah, and he cut inside, and I thought he was gonna go inside to go shoot, and then he cut me again to the right, and then I fell. But I didn't. I put my hand on the ground. You know that one where you kind of do like the
great dance.
Great dance.
Listen, let me tell you this.
Crazy legs.
Listen, we've been to the heights. The three of us have been to the heights. We've been in the trenches together. I'll always remember how great Bees was because I never had to bring help across the Bees' side. And we played in Jamaica, and the grass was long as one time, and this boy was flying by Bees. And it's on those nights where you're thinking, we're in trouble here. If Bees is getting dumped straight, we're in trouble here. We ended up pulling the game up, but yeah.
Yeah, you see how he said it? You saved me. Thank you.
He brought it back in.
I kind of remember that game. I do remember that game, too. I remember that.
Oh, man.
Played so many.
Memories, man. How old are we?
Too old. Listen.
Too old.
We've been at it for a while.
Too long.
Tim, what was like with Gooch playing in front of you? Did he listen or he was hard-headed?
Both.
Combination.
Gooch is an alpha, you know, and the way I've responded and the reason I react to people the way I react is because I've always responded to tough love. I want you to give it to me. Like,
Jersey.
I want you to give it to me. You know, I'll internalize it and then I'll learn from my mistakes. And, you know, the great thing about those teams, and Gooch and I played a lot together. You know, Gooch is hard on people around him. I'm hard on people around me. So, I respect when I call myself a passive alpha. I mean, if there's another alpha in the room, I won't bow up.
Yeah. Don't lie. I can distinctly remember, Gooch, what the fuck?
I'm gonna yell, but if you yell back, I'm going to a show.
As he's supposed to, though.
God, man, listen, and not because he's on here. We've never seen anything like Gooch. Pace and power, ability in the air, and you know, in the sprint, in the turn, it was great. It was, you know, some of those back lines we played in the World Cups and World Cup qualifiers. Like, and you know, we all had each other's back. Gooch was the leader. I could yell, he could yell, but again, he could give it as much as he could take it, and that's for me. It was epic.
I remember. I'm just going to tell you this one story that it doesn't ever get out of my mind. This one instance, we're playing Brazil. Long ball over the top. I'm sprinting, recovering. I see you come out. You punch the ball up against my chest.
Was it D.C. or Baltimore?
No, it was. I think it might have even been in Chicago.
Could have been. Yeah.
If it would have been any other player, the ball would have just like fall. It freaking hit my chest, flew 50 yards in front of me for an own goal. And I remember we're both looking at each other like,
I remember that.
Stop listening, bro. Look at you.
So basically you said if it would have hit me, then it wouldn't have been over. Ah, man.
Come on, hit it down for a corner.
man, good days, man. Great days.
Hey, Tim, we have some great, incredible goalkeepers have come through the U.S. program. Tell us a little bit on what your thoughts on Casey Keller, Brad Friedel.
I mean, look, I think those guys were, I looked up to them growing up, man, you know, and the path that they blazed was exactly what I wanted to do. You know, I wanted to play in Europe, right? Casey went straight from here to Europe. Brad played the Columbus Crew in the MLS, went to Europe, but they both, I didn't care what I did. I just wanted to keep going on the path that they blazed. You know, we all have someone who comes before us, man. And for me, those guys were It made it slightly easier, you know, not terribly easy, but slightly easier for me to go to Europe because I could play in the Premier League. Why not? At least let's give this kid a chance because look at the other two U.S. goalkeepers. And so, you know, they paved a way for me. So I was always obviously really thankful.
We were talking a little bit about the goalkeepers, and a lot of people forget to mention Tony Miola out of Jersey. You know, he was a very big for our generation, the style, the jersey look. You know, tell us a little bit about Tony Miola, and did you have a relationship with him on the come up?
Great relationship. So my first year at the Metro Stars, who are now New York Red Bull, Tony was a starting goalkeeper. So for the first 2 years of that time, he was starting goalkeeper. So goalkeeper, they just chucked me in the room together, and he took me under his wing. Again, tough love. You know, he was the man, right?
So yeah. He knew it. He knew he was the man, too.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the faces of MLS, playing in his hometown, World Cup, all that stuff, World Cups. And and so he made me earn my stripes, but that was great. And then once I did, he looked after me, man. Looked after me all the time.
Yeah.
Never made me pay for a meal. Always gave me information and advice. And after he left to go to Kansas City, which he had great success, was always a phone call away. So, yeah, Tony was massive.
You know, what do you think about the new generation of goalkeepers? We have a large pool of goalkeepers, and ever since you retired from the U.S. national team, there hasn't been somebody really, really has kind of taken that, you know, by the head and said, "Listen, this is my ground, and we know game in, game out, this is going to be a starting goalkeeper." What do you think about the new crop?
I love Zach Steffen. I think that two things. I think the goalkeeping coaching in America, across the board, grassroots level and up, is below standard. So that's not, you know, that's no goalkeeper's fault, right? We're all
reality.
Who coached us. And so I think the standard is too low from a goalkeeping coaching aspect. There's some great ones in the country, but not enough. And then my firm belief with anybody, with my daughter, when she plays, and I tell her the same, these guys will tell you the same. No athlete gets better by being the best player in their environment.
Okay?
Amen. And so what unfortunately with the American generation crop, and look, we all make decisions for our career, for whether it be financial or otherwise. I don't believe you can grow as a goalkeeper because it takes such a specialty and such time that if you continue over the course of 6 years, particularly your first 6 years as a professional, being the best goalkeeper in your environment, man, I'll just act against you.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. So, Timmy, I got a last question. I got some wine because it's my birthday today. I don't know if
you know. Happy birthday.
Today's my birthday. So they let me have a glass of wine on my birthday.
You know? Adam, you haven't noticed how Beast has been slurring his speech?
it's my kind of podcast.
You know what I'm saying? So anyway, so for me, if the World Cup was this summer, you know, just if the World Cup was this summer, who would be – are you personally, not what U.S. soccer says, not what the media says. I know you're going to, you know, say it to me straight. Who do you think would be the starting goalkeeper? If the World Cup was this summer, if you were the coach, who would you put right now that you've seen, you know, behind the scenes? Who would you put in between the sticks?
It's tough, man. It's a good question. I think I will answer directly. But I think there has to be background. You know, obviously we all have experience with Goose. One of my best friends, you know, he's a guy who's been in the trenches, right? So bigger the moment, the brighter the lights, he don't care. What I worry right now is, since we had the heartbreak of not qualifying for World Cup, this current team, unfortunately, has gone a very long time without playing, really important games. Really important games. We missed out, and for whatever reason, presidential elections and coach, interim coaches and all that stuff, they missed out on massive games. So the biggest challenge they had was the Mexico Gold Cup final, right? We always breeze through the Gold Cup, and then really it's the semifinal and then the final. And that was the biggest challenge, you know? So this current team, I just don't think have been in the fire enough. I believe Zach is the future. I think he's – I do think he's top class. You know, the manager has a ton of confidence in him, and I would play him. I would play him if there was a game, you know, because there is, you know, and again, Goose wouldn't do any wrong, right? But there's something about, as you all remember, youth, right? We all go into a game now, we know the bad stuff. You know, the bad stuff. We're young. Mm-hmm. Like, bring on Italy. It don't matter.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, yeah.
You know, so there's so there's some good stuff about that too. But yeah, yeah. You know, like I said, I think from here on out, Zach is gonna carry that mantle.
Is that the way you're thinking on building a team in Memphis through the youth?
Good question. I personally, I don't give bees too much of a head start, but
I'm going to League One though. I'm going to League One.
So I know you're going to tear it up too. I think personally, I don't think USL right now, because as I said, contractually, and that could change with different things, is a lot of here today, gone tomorrow type stuff. I think you got to bring in some men. I think you got to bring in some experience. Yeah, I do. Do you have some young players? Sure, I do. I think you can. And they'd be sprinkled in. I think that's where youth system helps. Yeah. Would I play youth players from our youth system? I absolutely would if that was the case.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you, man. Because you hear even now, like the trolls, the soccer dads, well, we need younger. I'm like, yo, but they need to learn from somebody. You need experience, right? You can't have a team of 18 to 23 year olds
on the field.
Yeah, they don't know nothing. And so it's the fine balance of getting that youth with that experience, you know, and not being lopsided one or the two ways. So I definitely think like the championship is a great league to be able to find that balance, you know?
Yes. Gooch makes an interesting point, and to circle back to your book, I think I was curious when I came in this year as sporting director. You know, and sometimes when people say, like, who would win if a best MLS team played against a European team or whatever?
A European.
People have asked me that. Like, what – all right, so this kid from such and such big university in America goes to an MLS camp, gets drafted, isn't good enough for MLS. Where does he fit in on USL's system? I didn't know the answer to the question. And I'll say this. I think top collegiate players in America struggle in the USL. I think it's that good of a league. I've seen it with my own eyes. We've brought players in on trial. Some players have fallen, gone to MLS preseason in LA or Florida or Arizona. They've fallen out. We're like, all right, well, we'll bring them in for a look. And can they compete? A little bit. But it's not as if the best collegiate player in America comes into USL and blows it away.
But, Timmy, that shows you how bad soccer does to prepare these players for professional sports.
I agree with that.
You know, and, you guys didn't have the opportunity to really play college soccer. I mean, Gooch went for 2 years, but the most players go into college and come out a worse player.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's the college season. It's difficult, right? Because especially back when we were college or could have been college players, and that was the only path, you know, you had to go there. And I think now the difficulty that the actual players in the programs have more so than anything is the duration of the season. Right. Like they're competing in a 3-month season where the teams that they're going to are in a 8 to 10 month season. Right. So it's like apples and oranges.
Yeah. Well, it's development and development takes time, and you're right. And what I hear from Gucci, you know better than me, but what I hear from college coaches are like, basically most of them are babysitting and doing admin. They get like 1% of time with their players. And then Gucci said, you blink, your season's over. And oh, by the way, because of rules and regs, you can't actually coach them for the next 8 months or whatever. So it's tough. I agree with the development stuff.
But Sammy, before you go, I would love to discuss with you a little bit about the business side of you. I think you did a tremendous job towards the end of your career, investing in some companies and starting some companies. Can you give us a little bit more of an insight and how did you juggle the both?
I've never been under any illusions that what we do on the field brings us everything else off the field. You know, look, we have an image. The image is one thing, but like you can have an image and be a really bad soccer player and you probably won't get a whole lot of stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And so you have
Instagram though these days. You could be better.
But even then you still gotta score some goals or something. Exactly.
But some of these players think they have Instagram likes, but go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, you're right. Listen, we agree on that. We agree on which is a big issue. Look, I think it's pretty simple. I try not to over dilute myself in terms of who I support and what I'm putting out there and what my put my name behind. And I like professional relationships. I like dealing with people who I like. Money's important. Like I always tell, and money, God, money's the most important thing. Like, I don't think anyone can deny that. I tell my players the same thing. They're like, well, it's not about money. I said, no. It's okay that you're sitting on the other side of the desk. Yeah, it's not money. But I like to get involved with companies that, one, that I like, that I could actually say I like this, and two, they kind of have share like the same vision as I do, and you know, and just wanting to not, you know, use me in the right way. You know, there's sometimes people will want to use me as an influencer, and I'll say that's cool, but like I'm not an influencer. Mm. I'm not like I get the beard, the shaggy beard, and the tattoos, but like I'm a former soccer player, so you got to figure out a way to leverage that. You know,
yeah.
I tell the companies that. So you know, and like I said, just getting involved with. If I care about doing something, like I'll give a perfect example. After the 2014 World Cup, I got a lot of exposure and signed with McDonald's. I think it was like a 2-year contract, right? We all had these endorsement deals. And one of the silos that they pushed me in was around McDonald House Charities. And I fell in love with it. The 2-year contract finished. And I said, don't worry about the contract. I don't want another contract. We're done. I said, but anything that has to do around McDonald House, let me know. And so I've always been able to do certain things. Obviously, that's on the charity side. But I've been able to keep connections with people even when, one, the contract doesn't work out. If I like the people, we still stay in touch. I do things for friends who I believe in their companies. So it's just about,
it's genuine.
Yeah, it has to be.
Very genuine. Yeah, yeah. Well, guys, man, I think it's a tremendous, tremendous opportunity to see Timmy join us, but also to hear about a couple stories of you guys and your careers and your journey. And like you said, the battle, right? The grit on the field. You know,
appreciate it, Timmy. Appreciate you, bro.
Hey, man, I love you guys. This was fun, man. Anytime. Man.
Thank you.
And we're excited. Good luck to Memphis. Hope you guys get a season in. And if not, we see you 2021. Gentlemen, thank you, everybody, for tuning in to the Crack Podcast. And we get a chance to see you guys next episode. Take care.
See you, Timmy.
Good birthday, Bees.
Thank you, man.
Enjoy it, man.
Appreciate it, bro.
Yeah. Bees, text me back. I text you. What a play!
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.